You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm joking, of course, but I redid my top prospects list, top 200, it's all hitters. I took every pitcher off the list since since they're evil.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
If you take Jason Kipnis out to a Chinese buffet and you feed him a bunch of food and then you tell him that you can't ever steal a base ever again, that's what pretty much I expect Cole Calhoun to do. It's just a fat
and,
Jason Kipnis.
And chop him off at the knee.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I have no idea who that is. Hey, Max, you tell me who you go on my podcast.
I don't know. If I haven't, though, I'm trading him to Andy, that's for sure. Shit.
I know it's been hard. Just give me some feelings. Hopefully you're not jumping off the ledge yet.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome in to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast, another prospect show, which I'm always excited for, especially since we have our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson, on. Matt, I know it's been a very sad, sad couple of days for you, and I would play some sad music in the background, but I know it's been hard. Just give me some feelings. Hopefully you're not jumping off the ledge yet.
Yeah, it does suck. I mean, I don't really have that high of expectations for the Cardinals this year. So one thing, I figured they'd be in the wild card hunt all year, and one, I think they still can be. I think this is a bigger loss in the entertainment wise. I think they're going to be extremely fun to watch with Reyes and Carlos Martinez pitching 2 out of every 5 games. But yeah, it's no fun. I redid my top prospects list, top 200. It's all hitters. I took every pitcher off the list since they're evil. So no, some, but it's
somebody got a little excited.
Yeah, it sucks with no Reyes, but and the worst part is they lose another year of control, and then he's, you know, not guaranteed to come back. Tommy John's no guarantee, so it's a scary thing. But we did our, you know, I have my prospect list coming out this week. I dropped him from number 3 to number 20 overall, so because he's going to miss all this season. So lose a little impact, but and add some more question marks with the health. So we'll see.
For those of you that have been living under a rock, Alex Reyes will be undergoing season-ending Tommy John surgery. He will not be available for 2017, and all prospect lovers are very, very upset about this.
As he should be.
Yeah, including myself. There's a lot to love with somebody like Reyes, but our other co-contributor to the prospect show every week is Mr. Andy Anderson. Andy, how are we doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Actually, Reyes going down benefited me. I'm going to get a trade. I'm off-season trade through
well,
because
then what
of that.
The hell?
So
it doesn't benefit anybody.
While you're crying river, I'm lounging. So there's that.
Yeah, sometimes the times when people get hurt by a trade or by, you know, somebody getting hurt or whatever, it's somebody else's reward. It's like,
that's true.
You know, karma.
And I will say this, though. We've gotten sort of unlucky. A lot of really good arms have been shut down because of Tommy John, but they've come back to do pretty well. So step off the ledge a little bit there. But
I was reading an article today, actually, from The Ringer. So check that out. Ben Liberg wrote it. He's one of the best out there. He wrote an article about the epidemic of the percentage of Tommy John surgeries in February and March are staggering compared to any other month. He wrote down, I'm not going to give you the details. I want you to go read it, but he gave staggering details and staggering statistics, and it's an interesting read, that's for sure. And it might be kind of borderline game changing as far as pitching health. So read that.
You would think it's because people are ramping up or, you know, getting their arms warmed up.
Yeah.
After an off season in which they're not throwing too much.
And another thing too, he did cite that, and he also kind of mentioned that people probably have injuries in September and October that they try to pitch through at the end, and then kind of give it a little rest, and then come back. Oh shit, it's not healthy. And
yeah,
you know,
sure. Either way that you look at this, it's very sad. Reyes was, if not the most exciting pitching prospect, one of the most.
Without a doubt, yeah.
And it's just really tough to see somebody go down this early. Luckily, he is only 22. He will come back from this. Some housekeeping notes before we get started here. We are going to be covering second base today, like we did last show. We went through our top 10 list of catcher and first base. We're going to do the same thing here with second base. Also give a few honorable mentions on each of our lists as well. Please rate and review the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators in which you listen to this program. Really helps us out. We are finally in the top 10 among fantasy baseball shows, and we're also in the top 25 among all baseball shows. I really appreciate all of the listeners out there, everybody that's been giving reviews. We have hit the highest listenership we've ever had. And it's all a product of the listeners. So I really appreciate everybody that's gone and, you know, just rated the show. And if you also rate and review and send a screenshot of it on Twitter to Justin Mason or the at Fantasy Benefits Twitter handle, you'll get into a listener league of, well, I think we're going to have multiple, you know, listener leagues this year. But if you do that, you'll be eligible to get into one of those. We also have some other prizes as well. So please continue to do that. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much for doing that as well. I do want to just talk about Reyes in a short sense right now, because, you know, he was pretty much the number one pitching prospect out there. And for me, I know we were kind of talking about this pre-show, Matt, or earlier when we found out about this news. For me, what I like to do with guys, especially high pedigree prospects like Reyes, whenever they get injured with something like this, I just like to push them off to the side and not worry about them for a year. So Reyes, for me right now, while he was my number one pitching prospect, he still will be there for me next year. He's not going to be considered a prospect going into 2018, but he still will be my number one prospect arm. This doesn't really have an effect for me in terms of his long-term output or projection, but I do want to get you guys' opinion on what you would do with Reyes in terms of your list right now for starting pitcher. I'll start with you, Andy, because I already have a little bit of an idea what Matt's going to do.
So I agree with sort of putting him on ice. And I think the dropping him down also makes sense. I got to say, though, I'm expecting guys to have big years in the minors. So if a Giolito has a big year, if a Glasnow has a good year, well, he'll be up. But if we see good guys have good years in the minors, he may drop down to two or three. But yeah, he deserves a top five spot. So that's where he'll stay.
Sure. And there is a lot of talent in the starting pitcher pool.
Right.
Especially somebody like Glasnow, who I'm in love with this year, and, you know, Anderson Espinosa, Lucas Giolito, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, Matt, where are you putting Reyes right now? I know you want to downgrade him. How far are you down based on this?
I originally had him number three on my list, top pitching prospect, obviously. My initial reaction to the injury, the Tommy John just being official, I dropped him originally down to 30.
30 overall, yes.
And that put him right around, for me, on my personal list, Bradley Zimmer, Kyle Lewis, Francis Martez, Ahmed Rosario. He was in the range of those guys. But after thinking about it again, it's really hard situation. After thinking about it again, I moved him up back to 20. My rationale is I have Michael Kopech at 21 with Reyes at 20. And even with this injury and Reyes being out for the season, he's still going to be in the major leagues again before Kopech makes his debut. You know what I'm saying? So I can't really justify putting him below Kopech. And then obviously Kopech, being the velocity monster that he is, carries the same injury risks, as even intensified because of the velocity that any pitcher has. So the only pitching prospects ahead of Reyes right now for me are Giolito, because I think he makes a second half impact for the White Sox and loses his prospect eligibility after that. And then also Tyler Glasnow, because he's going to have a major league start. And I'm still on the Glasnow train. I know some people aren't. Spoiler alert for me, Glasnow is 17 and Reyes is 20. So I don't know if that gives you a sense of anything. I know you disagree with that, Mike, but that's my rationale, because he loses a whole year of impact for your fantasy squad. So I feel like I have to lower him.
It's not that I disagree with it. My only problem is, where are we going to be putting Reyes next year at this time? And like somebody like Kopech, I think it's pretty obvious. I'm still going to have Reyes well above him. No matter if Kopech has a 1.5 ERA this year, I'm still going to have Reyes ahead of him based on what I've seen. And that's the problem, is we're getting a whole year of Reyes wiped out, and it's really hard to gauge where you would be putting him amongst all these other minor leaguers that aren't going to make their debuts this year. I completely understand if you're doing a restartup dynasty draft right now and you want to take somebody like Lucas Giolito in front of Reyes or Tyler Glasnow, I completely understand. But next year at this time, we might be seeing Glasnow go under the knife somewhere in the second half this year.
Oh, you have some wood there? Just go ahead and knock on that.
Absolutely. I'm knocking on now. But that's the thing here, is that's why I put him off to the side, because you never know what's going to happen with anybody. And I still consider Reyes to be a top flight talent. I just don't want to mess with it. I did the same thing with Miguel Sano a couple years ago when he went through his Tommy John surgery or whatever. I just put him off to the side. And then the next year, he ended up being pretty much in the same spot when I was legitimately looking at all the prospects. He ended up being in essentially the same spot that I had him the year before, and it really didn't make much of a difference anyways.
So, yeah, this Reyes injury for me, it doesn't necessarily lower the ceiling. I still think he's a front of the rotation guy, but it makes him it adds more question. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't lower the ceiling, but it makes it more uncertain that he reaches it. So I have to accommodate for that a little bit. You're taking on more risk now.
I will say his command was always something I was a little worried about, especially watching him a little closer in the Futures game last year. But you know, with that velocity and that devastating curve, it really didn't make much of a difference for me. I'm hoping he comes back and he's as good as ever. That's all we can really say. Andy, do you have any closing thoughts on this Reyes news?
It's sad, but we'll still be excited to see him when he comes back next year.
Absolutely. He's still going to be one of the top flight guys. I have no problem with anybody reaching for him in dynasty drafts at this point either, but
nope.
Anyways, let's move on. Let's go into our list. I know it's, you know, the second round of us doing this. I'm really excited to continue our series here. Just so everybody knows, this is episode 220. I know I didn't say that at the beginning because, you know, I just like to mention that this is the prospect show, but this is episode 220 in case anybody's wondering. And
don't fire us, Justin.
Yeah, don't fire us, please. We have things that we need to maintain here. But all right, the number one second baseman on everybody's list. I think we'll all be unanimous here. But Andy, who's your number one guy?
It is Yoan Moncada. Gotta love it. He is not only number one on my second baseman list, he is number one on my prospect list. He is the real deal. No one moves as quick as he does, hits as well as he does, and has given as much money as he deserves. He is the specialist player that I can remember for a long time. He's going to come right up, do well.
I have no idea who that is. Matt, can you tell me who Yoan Moncada is?
I don't know. If I haven't, though, I'm trading him to Andy, that's for sure. shit. Yeah, Moncada's my number one guy. He's my number two overall prospect, though. The strikeout concerns scared the hell out of me last year. Obviously, he's going to adjust. He's going to be better. He still has a ridiculous ceiling, I think. I think seasons, not at the same time, of course, but I think 30 to 40 steal seasons and then eventually 30 home run seasons are well within route. I think he's going to put up the big steal numbers initially. Hit, you know, 15, 18 home runs when he comes up, gets regular season at-bats. As he gets bigger, grows into the power, the speed will decrease, and they'll switch. So, you know, he'll be at 25, 30 home runs with about 15 steals in that. Hit for a strong average, good walk rate, good walk percentage. Just needs to keep the strikeouts down. That puts a little bit of a worry for me for the batting average, but, I mean, he's – I don't want to say he's the real deal because we don't know that we don't know that yet, but he's – he's pretty nice, that's for sure.
Well, let me sort of defend what I meant, but I don't remember a kid moving up through single A to double A to the majors as fast as he did the year you got signed. I mean, unless you guys can correct me, I have not seen that ever before.
Well, Michael Conforto sped through fairly fast. I know when he got, mind you, he was a college product and pretty much ready when he came in, but you know, off the top of my head, I'm sure there's a plenty of examples of guys coming through the minors fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the sake of the argument, yeah, it's a really quick advancement. Anyways, I'll go on my little tangent about Yoan Moncada. First and foremost, he is built like John Cena. Guy's just massive. If you're talking about projectability, like, he's already there. There's no reason to worry about what he's going to project to look like. His body, his frame, his athleticism is already there. He's ready. In terms of the contact problems, like you were alluding to, Matt, 73 and 74% contact rates in 2015 and 2016, high A and low A as well. you know, it dropped to 64% in 177 at-bats at Double-A. That's kind of the biggest problem for him. If there's one glaring mark on Yoan Moncada, that's what it is. But in a lot of OBP formats, he's fine. You know, he's sat at 12% or above in all of those stints. The bat speed and the raw power are magnificent, especially for a guy of his age. I think he has upwards of 30 home run power in his prime. He also has really nice speed. He has 45 or more stolen bases in both pro seasons. I think he's a future fantasy first rounder, especially if he gets the contact in check. If he's able to just get it to about, you know, 20%, 25%, somewhere in there in terms of the strikeout rate, I think you're going to be looking at, you know, a 270 hitter that can hit 30 home runs and have at least 25 or 30 stolen bases until later on in his career once he kind of moves that over. I think he'll end up being a guy that's more of like a Robinson Cano that hits, that doesn't have as much batting average, but hits for that type of power, doesn't steal that many bases once he gets into his latter years. But the guy is built like an absolute horse, and he's ready to play. I don't think we'll see him at the beginning of this year. I know a lot of people are thinking he will get called up fairly soon, and I just don't believe it. The White Sox are going to want to get as much service time out of him as they possibly can, and I don't think that he will, you know, make a debut early.
I'm actually making the case that I don't think he comes up for the White Sox until September.
That might happen.
As far as the White Sox are concerned, Moncada came up last year in September for Boston. The thing about that is September service time only counts for the player as far as their pension and their health benefits go when they retire. But September service time does not count towards free agency. So as far as the White Sox are concerned, Moncada has flat zero. So they have no incentive. They're going to be bad. Brett Lowry is actually one of the mainstay guys that they actually have, and he's going to be at second base. So I don't see Moncada coming up and getting meaningful at bats at all. I'm staying away from him in redraft leagues.
Right now, if you were to they have in NFBC at least they have him at third base. But if you were to kind of extrapolate it out to second base ADPs, he would be at second baseman number, looks like 19 or 18, somewhere in there, which is right around Logan Forsythe, Jed Jericho, Neil Walker area. I'm gladly taking those other options because I can't count on playing time for this year. But a conversation I do want to have about Moncada is, if you're doing a dynasty startup right now, what rank is he in terms of second base? Right now you have Jose Altuve up top. Obviously, you're going to put him in front. Trey Turner, I would put him in front of Moncada as well. Cano, Dozier, Daniel Murphy, Rougned Odor, D. Gordon, Andy, where would you slot Moncada in amongst all the second basemen right now?
Probably down by the list that you mentioned. I'd rather have a guy, even D. Gordon, who has all this shroud of what is he going to do. I'd rather have any of them over Moncada. But to go back to what you're saying about service time, there's absolutely no way that he starts this year. I don't see Chicago making that bad move. Although I do feel like maybe after the Super 2, barring an injury, we do get to see him. But one of the main things that I saw last year was Boston moving him around way too much. You know, they tried him in outfield, they tried him at third base, they tried him at short, and I don't know if that's like super conducive to a good hitting environment. And then he hit well. So hopefully with a mainstay, what they say, second base is yours to lose. You know, don't worry about Lowry. You just do your best in the minors. That probably is a better conducive nurturing environment for him.
Sure. My thing about Moncada, the thing I love the most probably, is when I watched him in the Futures game, that is when the spotlight is on everybody. You have to try and make a big play to get noticed by everyone. And he just stunned it out. Like, he was not worried about the limelight. He came out there and he hit a couple home runs. He was a stud, and that's what I love the most. In the big moments, the best players always come out and they shine, and that's what Moncada did. Those guys that have that type of grit and that type of enthusiasm when the, you know, the stage is the biggest is the guys that I get really excited about. And Moncada has that it factor. He just, you know, has that that big profile that I love. So that's not just because of all of the tantalizing, you know, attributes that he has. It's also the fact that he has that spark that really gets me excited about him. It's the intangibles.
He's got that look, man. He's got that look of, hey, the game's just slower for him. You know what I mean? He slows the game down. It's the best way to describe it. He just slows it down, and his heartbeat is so much like at a lower rate than everyone else's out there. He just looks like he's a man amongst boys in the minor leagues, and the numbers he put up showed it. But back to your question, as far as in a dynasty, I'm projecting. We'll say for the next 3 years, right? We'll use that as arbitrary cutoff here. I think for sure I'd go Altuve over him. Definitely Trey Turner. Definitely, I still think I go Daniel Murphy. I go Odor. I go Cano. I think the cut line for me is it's right now between, I'd go Dozier over him, and him and D. Gordon right now is a toss-up. So what does that put him, about seventh?
About seven, yeah.
I think I'd go about there.
So you wouldn't put him over.
Right now, it's tough. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't put him over Kinsler or Pedroia.
I would. I'd rather have Moncada in a dynasty startup. I would take him over them too.
I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Yeah. You would put him over. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I completely agree.
If I was drafting today, I would take pretty much all the way down to D. Gordon. That's where I would probably land before I would take Moncada. But if somebody gave me the argument, if somebody drafted Moncada right after Turner as the third guy, like a top five, he was a top five second baseman for them, I would have no argument, because again, I think he is a fantasy first rounder in the years to come. It wouldn't surprise me if we're projecting out 3 years if he was a fantasy first rounder come year three. But
yeah, I agree.
It's a big risk that you're taking to do that. So if you're risk averse, I think that you have about seven, probably more if you include like Gene Segura. Probably more guys if you're being risk averse in terms of taking in front of Moncada. But if you are not risk averse and you want to embrace taking a guy that does still have plenty of risk in terms of his batting average, then I think Moncada would be the type of guy that, you know, you can land on within the top five second baseman. So, all right, let's move on to our second guy. Who is your number two second baseman, Matt?
Ozzie Albies.
Of course it is. How about you, Andy?
I actually went with Ian Happ in my number two spot.
I also went Ian Happ. So, Matt, why do you like Albies at number two?
Well, plus speed with a plus hit tool. The defense is good enough for shortstop, but he's obviously with Dansby Swanson there. Albies is going to play second. I think Brandon Phillips arriving does push the Albies timetable back a little bit. He might not come up till the second half now. I originally thought he might be up in April, late April, kind of play that game. But he's recovering. He actually had an elbow surgery. He fractured his elbow in September when he's in the minor leagues, and he's coming back. He's going to miss the first few weeks here, maybe a week or two of spring training, and then he'll be back at it. So I'm not really worried about that. But, I mean, I love Albies. I think the stolen base upside is for real. I think he's a guy with the at-bats. I think he can steal 30 bases in the major league level. Like I said, the defense is there. I think the power is going to be a little bit surprising. I think he's going to grow into it. The best comp I've seen for long-term value, I mean, take away that monster season Ellsbury had when he, you know, in Boston. But I think Jacoby Ellsbury with second base eligibility is a very solid comp for Albies, and I think that's a very, very solid player.
You know what's interesting is Ozzie Albies, Ian Happ, and Yoan Moncada are all switch hitters, which I find kind of interesting at the top.
It's really
of the
cool, yeah.
Position. It's pretty fun. Andy, I don't know where you have Albies, but do you want to give some remarks about him?
So he's right next. He's right next to him.
I also have him there too.
At number three. I just want to go to Ian Happ real quick. I do think the power is there. I think it will come up a little bit because he's a little bit bigger. If I remember correctly, I think he's a little bit bigger for a second baseman than we would normally see. You know, he doesn't have the D. Gordon frame, but he can still run real quick. The power will grow, and that's why I have him at number two. And the reason I have Albies at number three is we are just getting past an injury. The last year, the average was pretty low, lower than we'd like. But I think his speed is also real. It's just going to be interesting to see how those two pan out. They're definitely going to be battling each other for two or three this coming year. We'll have to see who comes out on top.
Go ahead. The thing with Albies, you have to realize, though, the kid was 19 years old playing in AAA. And you look on Baseball Reference, a really good tool. It takes, if you look next to the year the person played, it has their age. And then to the right of that, it has the age difference against the average player in AAA in the same league. Albies in the International League was 7.5 years younger than the average player, and he still hit .248, .307, .351, still stole 9 bags, hit 2 home runs. He was a non-zero with the bat, and he was 7.5 years younger than the opponents he's playing against. Think about that. Like, he's been aggressively pushed, and he's held his own. He went back down to Double A and hit .321, .391, .467, stole 21 bags, showed a little bit of power. I'm on board the Albies train, and my overall top 100 list right now, I have Ozzie Albies sitting in the 35th spot, so I'm high on him.
I love both of them. I think they're both interchangeable. It's pretty much a preference thing here if you wanted to put one in front of the other. In terms of Hap, I love Hap. I have him a little bit ahead in my view just because I think he's ready to contribute right now. He's done nothing but succeed in the minor leagues. He also got better last year. I do think he could possibly be a corner outfielder if his defense doesn't improve at second base because he hasn't been very good at the Keystone, at least to this point. Obviously, things can improve, but at least as of right now, there is that chance that he ends up going to the outfield, which could make his value either better for you because he might still maintain the second base and outfield eligibility, or it could drop him down just a little bit for you because he might only be outfield eligible. But I like, again, that he's a switch hitter. He does have his fair share of contact problems. He has 25% or more strikeout percentage in every spot in the minors thus far. But what I love, double-digit walk rates across the board. He did drop a tad in Double-A Memphis last year, but having a strong approach and walk rate is a part of his game. He's not a speedster type guy, but I do think he has 15 plus stolen bases in his future. He has 22 and 16 over two minor league seasons. The power should put him upwards of 20 once he matures a bit. I think that 15 would be what he would sit at right now in the majors, but he had 15 and 488 at bats in high A and double A in 2016. I think 20 is a nice number for him once he does make the major league. So a 2015 outfielder with, a 260 plus batting average is pretty solid, and he's pretty safe because he's an advanced hitter. I think he'll probably make the club sometime this season as well. So that's why I have Hap ahead. And I also think that I had Albies number two pretty much this whole entire offseason up until Brandon Phillips got signed, because I do think it delays Albies' promotion. I don't like the injury either, but Albies, what I love about him is, again, the fact that he was so young for the level. That is outrageous how young he was and still be able to produce at a pretty decent level. His defense is 100% going to keep him on the field, and we love to target guys that have above-average defense because they will stay on the field and they will make contributions for your team. Again, another switch hitter who's making strides in terms of his slender frame. He's finally starting to get up a little bit in terms of I think right now he's, 5'6", and, 5'9", and, 155 pounds.
He's a little dude.
Yeah. When you look at Ian Happ, he's already 6 feet, and he's over 200 pounds. So, obviously, the development is already there for Happ. Albies isn't quite there yet. But once he does get his frame, he packs on a few pounds on his frame, I think that there's a lot of really good fantasy tools here. He's never had a higher than 20% strikeout rate at any stop in the minor leagues, and his walk rate seems to be pretty solid as well. Again, he made it all the way up to AAA. I think that he has the speed to steal 40-plus bases after he learns the skill in itself. I mean, he's super fast, but he still has some trouble kind of learning the skill of stealing bases. Once he gets that kind of under wraps, you could see a guy that steals upwards of 40 bases. And the power, while if you asked me last season at this time, I would have told you that he probably has D. Gordon-type power, maybe one or two in a season. He hit 6 home runs last year, and I think that maybe double digits could be in his future. Again, if he bulks up just a little bit, maybe gets up to 180, 190 in his weight, I think that could definitely be something that's part of his game. So, strong hit tools should give him about 300 batting average at peak, somewhere in the vicinity of, 5 to 10 home runs, and then 40-plus stolen bases. I love that. So that's what I think about Albies.
I guess for me, it's interesting that you brought up the Brandon Phillips knocking Albies down, but you're not worried about Ian Happ breaking through in Chicago? I mean, it's pretty crowded there. And
sure.
I look at that, and that's part of the reason why I have Hap lower. I will say, in OBP formats, which I play more of, I would have Hap higher than Albies because Hap is going to be an OBP monster, has already proven that. Albies is an aggressive hitter, but he's aggressive, but it's worked so far. He will hit any pitch in his zone. He hits it on the ground, uses the speed. He's a free swinger, I'll say. But it hasn't come back to bite him, but he could easily have the BABIP year where he doesn't fare well. I mean, the speed kind of protects him from that aspect. But Ian Hap is a safer option. Hap has the OBP, like I said, the walk rate. I do think your projection of 15 homers now, 20 in the future is spot on, Mike. I love that. I think just with Ian Hap, I loved him when he was at Cincinnati. Obviously, the plate approach is the number one thing for me, the power, the speed combination, all sexy. But the thing here is I think with the Cubs, he has to get traded or he's not going to really break into a regular role ever because Zobrist's contract is they have an option, I think, after this year, but then Baez needs a place to play. And you have all that kind of moving parts going on. So I think he's traded, and if he's traded to a team, you know, and say he's traded May or June for a pitcher, he can come up right then and there and be their second baseman.
The Cubs have shown us they're willing to make trades, and although he would be a big chip to trade, you know, they traded Torres last year too. So I don't see a problem with the Cubs trading Hap. I think that's eventually what is going to happen, and wherever he lands, he'll probably get shot right up. So that's why he is number two on my list, just because he's coming up.
It's tough to project because, you know, I'm pretty certain that Albies won't make it up until Brandon Phillips is gone. But when you're looking at the Cubs situation, all it takes is a Ben Zobrist injury, and I think Ian Happ is a full-time player for them, or close to it. You know, with Brandon Phillips, you could say make the same argument about Phillips, but Ian Happ is more advanced. He's, you know, his body is more developed. His approach is more developed. He's an older player by a significant margin. He's just ready to contribute now at about the peak that he would contribute in the major leagues. Albies has a ton of projection left. He has a ton that he needs to kind of grow into and just, you know, kind of flourish at the AAA level before he can kind of show that in the major leagues. I just think there's a little bit more development that needs to be done with Albies. Not saying he wouldn't be productive if he made it to the majors, and if Brandon Phillips gets injured or gets traded, I think that's what we'll see. We'll see Albies up there. He's part of the rebuild with the Braves. But like I said, it's kind of interchangeable, and it's based on preference.
It is.
I really do. It is. I love them both pretty much equally.
I went with the Albies with the explosiveness, and Albies is 2.5 years younger than Happ. That was kind of one of my deciding factors. But like I said, I have Albies 35, and I have Happ up 40. So, I mean, I'm splitting hairs at this point, so I agree.
But answer this, Mike. How sexy do you think it's going to be to watch him and Swanson next to each other at Turner Field in the next couple of years?
It's going to be quite sexy. And I hear that right field is going to be playing a little bit short as well, which, you know, obviously Albies being a switch hitter, we'll see a lot more right-handed pitchers. Yeah. It might give him a couple more home runs. I'm not saying he's going to hit like 15 or something. I'm just saying it might yield to a few more home runs. And Dansby Swanson I always love. I always love him. I've watched him so much, and I don't root for anybody more than Dansby Swanson. He's got amazing hair
gonna be,
as well.
Those two are going to be electric together.
It's going to be nice. It's going to be really nice. Let's move on to our fourth players here, since we all have the same consensus top three. Matt, who's your number four second baseman for this year?
Willie Calhoun.
How about you, Andy?
Oh, what a shock. It's Willie Calhoun.
I also have Willie Calhoun.
Look at that.
Anybody care to share?
It's so nice to all agree.
I guess I'll share mine since I haven't gone first yet, but I think he has a good enough plate skills to hit for high batting average in the major leagues. He does have a small frame, but it doesn't take away from the fact that he has 200-plus ISOs in three of his four stops in the minor leagues. He had 27 bombs last year. No speed, and the defense is definitely a problem, but with the strong hit tool, the plate skills, and the power, I think that you'll see, you know, some pretty good categorical production from somebody that doesn't necessarily seem like he would. So I like Calhoun as a guy that will give you no speed, but should give you a decent amount of pop, should hit for a good batting average, and plays on a team that should supply some pretty good run support for him as well. So I have him at number four because I do think he makes the majors at some point soon. It might not be this year, depending on how the year goes for the Dodgers, but my ETA for him is 2017 at some point. I like him a lot. Matt, what do you think about him?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to echo a lot what you said. I love the power numbers for Calhoun. He's one of the, if you're by a computer, YouTube Calhoun and watch him hit, because he's about 5'8", I'd say, of 240, 230. He's a traffic cone is what he reminds me of with his body shape out there. He's that type of guy.
Are you body shaming, man?
I am, because I can body shame. that's about my size too. Just give me a couple more inches and that's about me. But anyway, like Calhoun is he'd be higher for me because I love the power output, but I just don't think he can stick at second base, and that's going to be a problem because the bat is still likely good enough for left field. I mean, that's the only really other position he could move to, because I don't know about the height playing first base. That might be kind of teams will be reluctant to do that.
No.
So I think he could move to left field is the only other option, and the bat's not special for a left fielder, but it is special for a second baseman. He's going to offer no speed. That kind of hurts the ceiling a little bit, but it's all power, and He's the round mound of power at second base.
The Calhoun. Round mound of power. Andy, please give a better analogy than round whatever of power.
Sure, I would say if you take Jason Kipnis out to a Chinese buffet and you feed him a bunch of food and then you tell him that you can't ever steal a base ever again, that's what pretty much I expect Cole Calhoun to be. It's just a fat Jason Kipnis.
And chop him off at the knees because he's about 6 inches too tall.
Yeah. Although I don't know this. I guess RotoWire has to get updated because right now I'm showing a buck 87 for his weight. Maybe they just don't body shame the way you.
That's comical. If you want to laugh, look up Alex Reyes' weight too. It says like 175.
Yeah, right. Sounds... The guy's sitting at a solid 220.
Yeah.
probably being bigger after the Tommy John surgery because he's getting up sitting around eating Asian food all the time, just like
smoking weed, eating Chinese food.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that.
And getting paid. Don't forget, he's getting paid millions of dollars.
He's on the 40 man, so.
Sorry, Andy. We keep interrupting you with all these random whatever.
It's all fun games. I like Willie Calhoun. He stuck the entire year down at AA. If they do decide to bring him up to second base, there's not a lot of things in his way. He can definitely stick. He's got the power. He will be a cool second baseman, but a average middle of the road left fielder.
Sure. And in terms of promotion for this year, I think it definitely would be late. He's certainly going to be in Las Vegas this year, not Las Vegas, in AAA this year, which probably will give him a few more home runs than he would have had last year. Mm-hmm. So he might inflate a bit unless you have some guys in your league that actually understands what leagues some of these prospects play in. But I do like Calhoun for this year. I do think he makes a promotion sometime in the second half, depending on injuries or barring injuries. Logan Forsythe isn't a spring chicken, so if something happens to him, you could see somebody like Calhoun come up instead of them rolling, you know, Kiki Hernandez at second base full time or whatever. But I do like the profile. Let's move on to our next guy. You know, I'll just kind of start off here because I'm really excited about him still, even though he decides that he doesn't want to hit anything. And that's Travis DeMeritt from the Braves. Matt, who's your number five guy?
Travis DeMeritt.
How about you, Mr. Andy?
I have Luis Urias at number five.
Luis Urias.
Couldn't be more opposite players. What a combination of players we have here.
It is. And I have Urias down at the bottom, actually. He was just made my honorable mention. So, Andy, I'm really – let's talk a little bit of Luis Urias. Where do you have him at, by the way?
Urias, for me, is eighth.
Eighth. Okay, so I definitely want
to talk about him. Matt, that doesn't make any fucking sense. I mean, come on. You can't tell me that you're putting Ozzy so high up. Oh, look at this kid. Look at this kid. He can hit so high. You have a 19-year-old slashing slashes that are just ungodly. Come on. What's wrong with Urias? Why are you hating on him?
Me? Lack of power projection. And he cannot play shortstop. He's a second base only. So that hurts his projection in the future. Small body, just like Albies, but I don't see, if you look at Urias, he's a little thicker, and I don't think he's going to put on much healthy weight. And like I said, I question the power. The hit tool is there. The speed is there for now, but he's woefully inefficient on the bases. He's been caught stealing in the minor leagues more than he's actually been successful. The glove is average at second base, and like I said, he cannot play shortstop, whereas if Albies was to be involved in a trade, which I doubt it, but if he was, Albies is a shortstop for 20 other major league teams. And Urias is a second base only and not a particularly great one at that. That's my logic.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Andy, why are you so high on him?
Well, I think that the age is partly the factor. He's got a high ceiling. I love the Padres system. I really do. I think it's one of the best, and that's purely just because of the Dirk, the guy. I'm forgetting his last name. That's such a shame.
DJ Priller?
Dirk Hayhurst, the famous writer. But mostly it's the contact rate. I really like guys that sort of squirt the ball out there, and I think Urias can be one of them, and that's why he's so high up on my list. I'm not ignoring all the things that Matt was saying. I just think he's wrong. I don't like the caught more times than he stole, but that comes with age. That comes with age. That comes with learning, timing out cadences. Unless you're Billy Hamilton, and then you can just run whenever you want.
I love the plate skills, and I also love the hit tool as well. He's really, really sound at the plate, especially for 19 years old. Love that about him. My problem is I can't get the comparison to Jose Iglesias out of my head, because I think that Iglesias
without Iglesias' best skills, his arm and his defense.
Yeah, and that's the problem with Urias too, is that you don't really know if he's going to stick at second or what's going to happen there. But I do think this is somebody that we should monitor. That's why I have him in my honorable mentions. I think he could definitely move up if things kind of work, especially if he builds more power. If he ends up hitting more in the 15 home run range in one of the minor league seasons here, then I think he'll definitely move up the ranks just because his plate skills and approach are very, very good. The problem is, you know, 26 stolen bases, 32 caught stealings. That's definitely a problem. If we see him this year hit for, you know, 8 or 9 home runs, continue to have a good batting average, and then maybe, you know, not get caught more than he steals, then I think that that's certainly a reason to bump him up boards. But for right now, I think he's more of a, you know, back half of the top 10 guy or honorable mention player than somebody that I want to look for in fantasy. We'll see what happens. But
I still like Urias, so I don't want to like completely trash him. I mean,
oh, I hate him. I don't even want to talk about him at all.
It's something that the Padres moved him up to AAA for the AAA playoff run. Which is telling, because I mean, to push in a 19-year-old that high that quickly is encouraging. But another thing, if you want to look at it from a different standpoint, he came straight from high A. Everything he put up last year was in the Cal League. Cal League, if you don't know, is probably the premium offensive league in the minor leagues. That's not the PCL. It's runner up. They're right there with each other. And I understand at that time he was 18, mostly 18, and halfway 19 season. At high A, and he only hit 5 home runs, and that's the best offensive environment he's going to get to. Yes, it's not everything because he's so young, but I don't see a lot of power projection here. I do love the fact that he does not strike out, but I don't see the ceiling's not that high for me. So Albies has a much higher ceiling with the stolen bases.
We shall see what happens. Let's go to Travis Demerit. Where do you have Demerit, by the way, Andy?
So I have him under Forrest Wall. Great name. But 7th on my list.
7th on your list. And I completely understand why. The reason you would have him back there is because dude literally is the cliche of having trouble with the curve. Like, literally the cliche.
I think they made that movie about him, yeah.
They did. He was the hitter that ended up striking out against the lefty popcorn boy, if anybody
never
remembers
seen the movie. Never seen it.
Have you not seen Trouble with the Curve?
I don't like baseball movies because they always suck. So.
Oh, man, it was a great flick. I mean, Clint Eastwood gave his classic, like, I'm grumpy old man face the whole entire movie. He kept up bumping into walls and acting like he was blind. He was coughing up blood, just, you know, about to die like he is in every single movie. And Amy Adams was solid. Justin Timberlake was doing his best broadcaster impression the whole time. It was a good flick. I mean, I know I'm making it sound like it's a must-see, but it was pretty good. You should watch it. But anyways, with Demerit, he is the epitome of fantasy upside, because his upside is upwards of 30 home runs and 15 to 20 stolen bases. That's how big he could be. And he does show a lot of patience, strong walk rates across the board in the minor leagues. The problem is, though, 28% or more strikeout rate at every single level. If you want to look at maybe one positive remark from last year, is he went from having a 45 and 59% contact rate in 2015 to having a 60 and 62%. In 2016, so more progress.
It's the small things, baby.
Some marginal gains there, but I can tell you this. I can promise you this. If he can ever get to somewhere in the vicinity of like 20%, 25% even strikeout rate, then this guy is going to have a monster season in fantasy, and maybe seasons across the board. I love the fact that Atlanta took a shot on him. I hope that it works out. That's why I have him here at number 5. If he does work out, then you get an absolute stud. But at the same time, there is a considerable amount of risk here. More risk with him than probably the most of these guys that are on this list. I think that Luis Urias, even at the very end on my list, has a better chance of fulfilling his ceiling than Travis Demerit does.
Oh, he definitely does.
But if it clicks for Demerit, then you're looking at an absolute fantasy star, and I will pay for that, and I will gamble on that any day of the week. So, Matt, give us some Travis Demerit love.
I'm excited about Demerit because he's, you know, going to Double A. I love everything you touched on. I think the numbers were spot on. He's going to be a batting average liability, probably, you know, with the strikeout rate, and the contact rate is already low. One thing that worth noting, again, I play in OBP leagues. He's going to be a good source of on-base percentage, so it's not going to kill you in leagues like that. Interesting background for Demerit. Obviously, a Texas Rangers product, will have served an 80-game PED suspension in 2015. So that's a little black mark on the resume, whether you think so or not. I personally don't care about that stuff, because if he's taking PEDs as a minor leaguer, he's going to hit more home runs, and
Well, he still had 25 home runs at 330 at bats. So in 2016, so apparently the steroids didn't do much for him.
All that strength is not going to go away, if you know what I mean. You keep working out, it's still going to be there, all the gains you make from that. But the raw power is legit, plus bat speed. He can hit the ball out of any ballpark if he makes contact. He's going to be a four category asset in fantasy leagues. He is the guy you take the shot on in your deeper formats because if he absolutely hits, you have a monster on your hands. Like I said, he's going to be an on-base percentage asset, stolen base asset, power asset, RBIs and runs asset, just a batting average. And if you play in OBP leagues, it's going to wipe away a lot of that. He's a really, really good defensive second baseman with a really good arm. Just needs to cut down that swing, baby, and we'll see what we can do. But I love Demerit.
Sorry, when I said 28% or worse in every minor league level, I actually meant 38%. I did the math wrong there, just so we know. But I want to ask you guys this. If he ends up having a 45% strikeout rate this year, are you just saying, you know what, it's over with? I'm not going to do this anymore with him. I'm going to kind of drop him down permanently at this point. I'll ask you, Andy.
Well, so we're going to have to see what a full year at AA and AAA will do. He will probably lose a decent amount of hype if he does have a 45% strikeout rate. Geez, that'd be ungodly. But I think more to the point is that it's so sexy. Everything that he offers is, I mean, and as Matt was saying, the OBP is there too. So it's not like you're completely getting lost if you're in an OBP league. But I have trouble putting him any higher than where I have him, which is seventh, just because of that. I mean, he just can't hit a curve. And I guess the rationale behind that is at one point they got to throw a fastball, right?
He's like the Chris with a C Davis at second base, except for, you know, he obviously has some speed. Demerit does.
Mm-hmm. The comp I keep seeing that I like, if he puts it all together, Brian Dozier.
Yeah, so that was my next question.
Dozier didn't have that bad of strikeout rates, though.
No, he didn't. No, that's obviously with that caveat, but nobody that's, I mean, the strikeout rates that he's had, the margin for error is extremely thin. It's actually non-existent because the strikeout he has now is not playable in the major leagues.
That's why.
That was my next question. Is, let's say it all comes together, who would you rather have, Dozier at his prime or Demerit at his prime?
If it all comes together, I mean, that's a lot of ifs. But if it all comes together, I'll take Demerit. I think he's so much younger and he's going to put up. Well, Dozier's kind of been inconsistent in his career at the batting average is going to be there too.
That's very true. Yep.
When he popped 40 home runs out of nowhere, kind of.
Yeah. I'll take the Morissetti guy, which I think.
The tools are there for Demerit to do that. The problem is, I'm going to be completely real here. I would say the chance of Demerit coming up and doing what Dozier has done is 5%. probably less than 10% at this point. Somebody, especially if we see him in AA this year, you have another 35% or worse strikeout rate. That it's just not going to work out. I just don't think it will. Go ahead.
He's a borderline. He's right on the cusp right now. He's my number 100 prospect on the nose right now. And if he has another year, like if he has a 35% strikeout rate in AA, he's not going to be near my top 100 again. Because when you get to the upper level of minors, you're talking about pitchers that know how to sequence and pitchers that know how to locate somewhat.
Command, yeah.
Yeah, and if they're going to either eat him alive or if he doesn't make adjustments. So it's a very, very big year for Demerit, and to say that's an understatement, I think.
He's the prime example of tools not necessarily equating to actual on-field production if it ends up sliding even more.
Right now,
he has his tools have been very obvious on the field. That's the thing, is like his power has shown, his speed has shown, it's all there. But if he continues to not be able to hit the ball, then all of these tools that we love will not see them. They won't be apparent to us, because if you can't get the bat on the ball, especially as you reach the higher minors, you're not gonna be able to walk, you're not gonna be able to steal bases, and you're certainly not gonna be able to make contact enough to hit home runs. And that's the problem here. So he at some point needs to improve this, at least to the point where it's like 30%. If he can get to 30%, then I think that he has a chance to make the major leagues and to do what he's been doing. If it ends up sliding even more, I mean, if you guys are, you're watching him this season and he goes below 40% in strikeout rate, it's just time to cut bait, because I don't see it getting any better. It certainly won't get better if he goes to Gwinnett, and it definitely won't get better in the major leagues. And
tough parks. Yep.
Absolutely. So
yeah, that was the other thing I was going to mention, was that he was playing in the Cal League. So we'll have to see how that translates moving east. But I agree. I think the Dozier comparison makes sense. I don't buy
power speed combo. That's and a low batting average. So right. Yeah.
But Dozier's a little more disciplined. He's a major leaguer. He's done it.
Sure is.
You know. Anyways, that's enough about DeMeritt. Let's talk about Forrest Wall is my next guy at number six. I know you already mentioned that you had Forrest Wall up at number five, correct, Andy? And
six, I'm sorry.
And then how about you, Matt? Who do you have at number six?
Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
Get out of here. All right, so let's talk about Wall first, since Andy and I both have him up here at six. What do you like about Forrest Wall, Andy?
Absolutely nothing. I don't know any of his stats. The name is amazing. And the name is ridiculous. So we sort of touched upon this last week when we were talking about people in Colorado. He doesn't really have a lot of power, but he does have enough to make an impact, especially if he's going to play in Colorado. His steals are cool. We like to see that out of a second baseman. I'm not going to trust RotoWire's weight thing, but he's 6 feet, and according to this thing, a buck 76, does not strike out like at all. He's a really good strikeout rate, pretty good, decent contact rate. He's just an exciting player. I have him at number six, and that's probably where he should be.
Yeah, I really like Wall, and most of it has to do with him playing in Coors Field, just because things can really get inflated by playing there. But he's got a strong approach at the plate. He has 8% walk rate or better at every single stop. And I also love that he has an 80% contact rate pretty much at every stop as well, except for one stop he had 79%. But he has enough speed to steal 20 or more bases in the majors, in my opinion. Smooth, compact stroke. It's conducive to line drives. I think he's an easy 270 hitter. Plus the power, even though it hasn't shown up yet, I think he easily can hit for at least 15 home runs, maybe 20 if things broke right. And since he's at Coors, I like a lot of things about Wall. Do I think he has the highest upside? No, I don't. But I love the home ballpark. I love his stroke. I think he has a nice hit tool, good plate skills, some nice speed. You could see a 15-15 type season or 15-20 type season out of him with a strong batting average. Playing in Coors with some nice run and RBI production, that yields to usually a pretty nice package that over there at second base. So that's why I have Wall there. How about you, Matt? Where do you have Forrest Wall on your list?
I have him number nine.
Nine.
Yeah, I've questioned the defensive ability of second base.
He does
been
have
pretty
defense
bad.
Problems. He does.
And the bat is probably not good enough to play. And the range in the outfield, in a big outfield in Coors Field, I don't know if he can handle an everyday job there. I do think he probably ends up getting traded, to be honest, because with LeMahieu and Story up the middle and Brendan Rodgers coming, Wall might get lost in the shuffle there. I don't really use the Coors thing for him because I don't see a spot for him there. I dropped him to nine. I think he's more doubles than home runs. I think he's not going to be a really strong asset anywhere, but he's not going to have a glaring weakness either. So he's an okay player. The ceiling for me isn't as high as you guys, but I think the floor is still relatively high, so he's number nine for me.
Sure.
What about Lourdes Gurriel? Andy, where do you have him ranked on your sheet, if at all?
I actually don't. I don't even have him ranked on my sheet. I'd like to hear what Matt has to say about him.
Yeah, give us some love, Matt. Why do you have Gurriel so high?
I think the hype machine is too strong against him right now. I know that sounds weird. I think people's opinions of him are way too down. He still did get $22 million. Yes, that's not a huge amount of money. But it's still a good amount of money, and it's still the Blue Jays thought that highly enough of Gurriel to put him to give him that much money. And the thing with Gurriel is a lot of what everyone saw was one or two workouts of him and video of him in Cuba. Everything I've read, which I haven't seen much video of him, and I haven't seen him play, so take this for what it's worth. I'm just going off of what I've read. He is not the type of player that's going to stand out in a showcase because he has no real plus tool, but he's really good at everything. And when you don't have a super strong arm, but just above average, and your speed's not elite, but above average, and the hip tool is not elite, but probably average, and the power is probably average in itself, but an average hit tool, average power, above average speed that can play anywhere on the diamond, I'll take that. And I think another reason why he's up on this list for me is because I think he comes up to Toronto at the second half of this year and has a full-time role in some capacity for 2018. And he's also good Devin Travis insurance because Travis is bound to get hurt. So that's my spiel on Gurriel. It's understandable. I think I'm the high man. I've said that I've seen on Gurriel. I think, like I said, a lot of the hype machine, he was supposed to be rumored to be getting Moncada money, and then he got less than half Moncada money. So it's kind of, people are kind of down on him there, but I still think there's a solid player here. So I'm in on Gurriel.
I like Gurriel. I have him at 8, and I'll just be transparent there. I think that he does have a strong chance to make the major league sometime this year if Devin Travis goes down, probably more in 2018. But what I love about him, I've seen very minimal video on him, and I don't know what to really make of him in general. He doesn't look like a physical specimen or anything. He definitely doesn't seem that athletic. But what I do love is when you look at his walks to strikeouts in the league that he played in the Cuban series, he has 117 walks to 136 strikeouts overall in that whole entire time. The last three seasons in particular, he has more walks than strikeouts overall. Pretty strong walk or batting averages across the board. Walk rates are pretty stellar as well. You have some home run pop there, a few stolen bases as well. It looks like he's been stealing more as he's gotten older. Not great success rates, but been able to steal a bit. If I had to project him based on the numbers I see and based on the minimal video that I've watched, over 500 at bats, I think he's like a 15 to, you know, 8-9 stolen base guy, which is nice with a pretty decent batting average. But that's why I have him here in the back half, because I really want to see more of him. I want to see him in the minor leagues. I want to see some video on him. I just want to see a little bit more information from somebody like Gurriel before I make a true opinion. So that's why I have him in the back half. But I do think he's interesting. I don't think he deserves to be getting crushed, you know, based in fantasy circles like he has been. So I agree with that.
Cool.
All right. Who was your guy, Andy?
I said Forrest Wall and then Travis.
Travis, sorry. I keep forgetting. We have so many guys. I need to do a better job of keeping up with you people. All right.
We're at number 7 now, right? Number 7?
Number 7. Let's go, Andy.
So I had Travis Demerit at number 7.
I'm an idiot. Go ahead, Matt.
That's okay. You're very handsome.
I am very handsome. I'll give you that.
I have Shed Long at number 7.
Shed Long. Wow.
Oh, man, can we say those words on the radio?
Yeah, we 100% can. We're explicit, but we can't say that.
Shedrick Long, baby.
Shedrick Long. I do not have Shedrick Long on my list. I'll just be completely honest there. What about you, Andy? Do you have Long on here?
Just made it at number 10. So that's right. Do you want to go first?
Sure, well, you guys can give your reports on him. I don't have him either on my list, so go ahead.
Go ahead, Andy, if you want to go first.
Well, I think his biggest problem was the Brandon Phillips issue. I don't think that by no means do I think he makes it up this year, but I don't think he makes it up this year. He's a good kid. I like the steals. I like the contact rate. It's a little lower than we would like to see, but we'll attribute that to age. I think he's going to be fast-tracked a little bit. We might even see him hit AAA this year, which would be pretty cool. And then if we do see him hit AAA, it's up to Jose Peraza to get hurt. And then I don't think we'll see Long up this year,
no,
but we should be seeing him forthcoming.
I really like Long. I mean, he's a story of he's the ultimate kind of story of why you don't roster catching prospects. And I look at it like this. I mean, he, the Reds converted him. He was a former catcher. He's a college catcher. The Reds moved him to second base this season, or this past season in 2016. And he in a heavy pitchers league in Daytona, he had 281, 371, 457 with 11 home runs and 16 steals, only caught 3 times, had 24 doubles. I really like the power speed combination. I really love the contact rate. This man doesn't strike out as much as a lot of other guys we've already listed off. I do think at second base, he's shown to be adequate enough there to stay there in limited time, but he just hits the ball hard, makes really hard contact. I like to swing. He shortens the approach with 2 strikes, just like you're supposed to do. It's a good approach. He has an idea what he's doing up there. I think he's an above average regular player with the defense, speed, and power, and the hit tool is no slouch either. And he's going to stick, like I said, he's going to stick up the middle. There's not a lot to not like about Shedrick Long. He's kind of new to the prospect circle. I'm not going to lie. November is when he popped up on my radar because he put up very unnoticeable numbers previous to this season. But I love him, a bat speed whore, and I love that. And the power and speed and the hit tool are there. So Shedrick Long, baby.
I have him off to the side. You know, I looked at him very briefly. I'm looking at him a little bit more now, and I like what you guys are saying about him. So there certainly is some fancy upside here. I want to see him do it in Double A. I do like
sure, and that's fair. Yeah,
I do like that he's a converted catcher and he has some speed to him. He also has some pop. I like the swing. I haven't seen any video on him, so I don't want to sit here and say that I love the swing 100% because I haven't actually seen it. But based on what I'm reading and based on some of the info I'm looking at, it looks like he does have some fantasy upside. But what I love in front of him is Dilson Herrera, Jose Peraza, and they still have Zach Cozart there. And that's kind of where I'm at with him is. Yeah, I like those guys in front, and Peraza and Herrera in particular have long, long careers ahead of them where they probably will stick up the middle as well. So that's kind of where I have a problem with somebody like him. But at the same time, I like the prospects overall, and I think this is certainly a season to watch him because if he ends up having another fine year in AA, then somebody like Shedrick Long could either be a trade candidate or move over to another position. Maybe you see him somewhere else, and that can definitely help him out in terms of his proximity to the majors as well. So certainly somebody that I have on my radar now just by looking at him a little bit more and kind of talking through it with you guys. So I'll check it out as I go forward. Who did I have in my list? I took it away for a second. I had Daniel Brito because I love upside.
Ooh,
and he's young as hell.
Yeah, man. There you go. So, he's on my watch list. Yeah.
I have him at, number seven here because he had 284, 355, 40, 421 in his pro debut, 190 at bats, projectable body. He's a lefty. That's going to play well in Citizens Bank Park. High contact, patient approach should yield a plenty of strong walk rates and batting average. He has enough speed for 15-plus stolen bases and has upwards of 20-plus home run power as well. I think there is a ton to love about Brito. I know he's young, and I know we need to see what he does this year and moving forward, but I think this is somebody that could be a fast riser in the minor leagues and through prospect lists as well. I just love everything I've seen about Daniel Brito, so that's why I have
it's there. All projection, too, baby. He's only 155 pounds.
Yeah,
so he's going to go into that. Yeah.
If yep. You got to stop saying burrito.
Burrito.
I'm right, getting hungry.
Who you guys have at number eight? I didn't number my guys. I'm going to be completely honest here. I didn't number my guys, and I put them all in just like this big robe. And it's really hard to keep up with my own list, let alone you guys' list. So I apologize to the listeners in advance for being a little sloppy here, but we like to keep our own lists, and especially me. If I don't have them numbered, it's really hard for me to organize it in my mind. So,
numbers 1 through 10 get really difficult, especially in that 8, 9, 10 range.
I also have trouble with my ABCs. It's not just numbers, so everybody knows this.
I have Louis Urias at 8 spot. We kind of touched on him already, so.
How about you, Mr. Andy?
I have Alan Hansen, who, I might get flack on this, but it's just, at this point, it comes to proximity to the league. That's why I have Alan Hansen so high. Boy, did he lose a lot of stock. That's kind of sad, but it's true.
Yeah, I love Alan Hansen. I have him at my number 10 slot. So I do still have a lot of love for him. My problem is I feel like the Pittsburgh is going to make him a utility player, and that's like my ultimate problem with him.
I think they already have.
Yeah, I think that we are seeing the Josh Harrison signs approaching.
Yeah, and that's my issue. Now, if you were to play a full season, I do think we would see double-digit home runs, and obviously speed is his best asset. I think we could see him steal 30 bases in the major leagues. The problem is, are we going to see that happen? Are we going to see him get an opportunity to actually do that? So that's my biggest problem with him. But the things I love is that he makes a ton of contact. He doesn't have the best walk rates, but makes a ton of contact. I think the batting averages will be solid in the majors. And he steals. So I love Hansen. I have him at 10. I think that he is very safe. I'm completely on board with you, Andy, here. I hope that things play out well. In Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, you can get him at an insanely cheap price right now.
Yeah, really, really a buy low opportunity.
And he's
going to
make the major. He's going to be in the majors this year, period.
That's all. I mean, that's very true.
Gong is probably not going to at least start the season.
He might not even get a – I was reading something about him. He might not even get a green card. They might not approve him.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in limbo with Gong. So if you have Alan Hansen and you're just sitting here like me, I have Alan Hansen in our 20-team league, and I'm just sitting here like, well, if he doesn't get an opportunity, that sucks. But at the same time, like, he's ready. He already made an appearance last year. He probably will get at least somewhat of an opportunity now. And if something happens to Josh Harrison, we're looking at him as almost a full-time player because what are they going to do, put Jordy Mercer out there full-time? No. So I still think Alan Hansen has at least the opportunity to carve out a significant role in the majors. If everybody's healthy right now, yes, he is a utility player, but I hope that there is more to come with somebody like Hansen. But what do you think about him, Matt?
He's not on my list, and it's for a lot of the reasons. I think you ever heard of like the guys that are tweeners in center field and left field? He's kind of a tweener between second base and shortstop, meaning the defense and range are not good enough to play short, but it's the range in particular, but he can play on really good second base because it's less demanding on both of the arm and the range. So I think he kind of fits in there. I question the hit tool a little bit. I know you like the contact rates. He's a .281 career hitter in the minor league, so maybe I shouldn't be as concerned as I am. I do agree with you on the 30 steal upside. I do agree with you on the double digit power upside. It's really hard to envision a situation this year or even next year where you can look at Alan Hansen getting 500 at bats, and that's where it struggles for me.
I agree on the hit tool too, because while he has high contact ability, he does not have really high batting averages in the minors. It's not like we're looking at a guy that's had 330 plus batting averages, right, or anything like that. So I completely agree on that front. Andy, go ahead.
Well, so let me ask you a question. Where was Hansen on your list last year?
To be honest, he's probably 8 to 10 in the second base list. He wasn't high for me last year either.
Interesting.
I had him higher last year, and he's actually lowered by probably 2 or 3 slots for me.
Yeah, that's where I would have put him too. I would have put him at that 5, 6, 7 range. I do really like him. I think it's sort of the counting stats player that we like to see. But that average is a problem. One full year at AAA hitting .266 is not what we like to see.
I think what we would have liked this year or last year in 2016 is if we saw a few more home runs and if we saw him hit for a little bit higher batting average. Like, he's never going to be an on-base percentage guy. He just doesn't have the walk rates to do that. But he does do a really good job of putting the bat to the ball, and you could see a season or seasons where he hits above .280. The problem is that we want the power over 500 at-bats to be somewhere in the 12 to 15 range, and right now
that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, we're not. I'm not comfortable saying that that's going to happen, which means that you're seeing a guy that hits .260, .270 with 25-plus stolen bases, and that's valuable for fantasy, but it's more of like middle infield and NL-only or deep league middle infield territory as opposed to being full-time, mixed league, asset type guy.
Agreed. And another thing to worry about, too, is Kevin Newman's coming up with the pipeline, too, at shortstop. I like him.
Frazier as well.
So,
Frazier up and running around. That's, I think, the biggest thing about Hansen. It's not that what he did last year really plummeted his value. It was all of the pieces around him have made things just so kind of clustered that it's hard to envision where he carves out a role.
There's a bit of prospect fatigue here, too, because Pittsburgh notoriously slow cooks their prospects. And I think people are just tired of reading about Alan Hansen on the prospect list, and myself included, probably in this subconsciously in this group of people without even knowing it. You kind of tend to write somebody off when they've been on prospect list for 5, 6 years. So that's probably part of it, too.
If he was with a team that could give him full-time at-bats, I think that people would probably have a lot more love for him.
I think he'd be looked at. Yeah.
Like, say Minnesota traded Brian Dozier and they ended up getting Alan Hansen in the deal, then I think Hansen playing full-time in the American League in Minnesota would probably still be somebody that everybody wanted.
Let me ask you this question, Mike. I know you're a big Peraza guy. With full-time at-bats, Alan Hansen and Jose Peraza, how close is it?
Jose Peraza, and I'm in love with him, so it's not close.
Okay, but you can see a scenario where it is close, right? I mean, they're not the skill sets are not dissimilar. It's just Peraza has an opportunity and Hansen does not.
Peraza is such a buzzkill for me because he just went, the 7th round in labor the other day, and that really upsets me because that means, since Brandon Phillips got traded, everybody's going to be on that bandwagon, and it really upsets me because I wanted to get him somewhere in the 12th, 13th, 14th round range for mixed leagues this year, and that's not going to happen.
Oh, not anymore.
All right, number 9. Who do you have, Andy?
I have Carlos Ushuaia.
I like him.
There's your little Latin flavor for this episode.
Nice.
One of my favorite things about this guy, I mean, I know we have to say he's hitting in the PCL. He did win Rookie of the Year at the PCL, which is nice. But the coolest thing about him, 172 hits last year, 52 of them were extra base hits. That is almost a third. So it's just really cool to see a guy come up, hit doubles, triples, home runs. I mean, the power is lacking, but he is a good hitter.
I almost dropped that same stat with Travis DeMera earlier. 52% of DeMera's hits were extra base hits. How crazy is that?
It's just nuts. It's a cool number. He doesn't have a roster spot, and there's no reason for San Diego to start his clock anywhere near the Super 2. But barring an injury and maybe good luck, again, I really love the Padres system. They do good things with their prospects, a la Derek Hayhurst. So I really like him, and he deserves a number 9 spot.
He's on my honorable mentions list. I don't know. He's a little old for the level, and I'm getting a little bit worried if the power is ever going to be there. He's more of like a gap-to-gap guy or line drive hitter. And if he can't hit for power, then it's kind of – with second base, the environment of second base being the way it is nowadays, you almost need somebody to hit for power and have some stolen base ability as well to be able to start them on your fantasy team. And Asuaje, as much as I want that to happen for him, I have him in my honorable mentions just because I don't know if that's going to happen. But, Matt, do you have any thoughts on Asuaje? Where do you have him ranked, if at all?
I do not have him ranked. He's in my honorable mentions because I do think – I mean, it's San Diego, so he could definitely carve out a role there. This year, even he's proved he doesn't need another year of AAA. He's proven that he conquered that league. He's your kind of, not to discredit him, but he's kind of the guy that's not great at anything, but not terrible at anything either. And that has value. If you play in like really big, you know, 20, 30 team leagues, Asuaje is a guy that you want to go get because, there's no real downside really. I know that's easy to say, but he doesn't do anything terribly. He's going to hit for strong averages if he gets playing time. The playing time is the only question mark, so you got to watch that.
Yeah, who's your number 9 guy, Matt?
We already covered him. My number 9 guy is Forrest Wall.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that because I've been forgetting about everybody's guys this episode. I'm going to go with my number 9 guy just to review as well since I didn't really – after Daniel Brito, I had Lourdes Gurriel, and then my guy now at number 9 is Omar Estevez. And I'm – gonna be honest, I'm a little bit worried because he is so young, and I had Brito up there a couple spots earlier, so we might not see somebody like Estevez for a while. I'm thinking like 2020, but I love what I saw out of him in a very, you know, short sample size, and also, you know, the signing amount that he was given also gives me a little bit of confidence with him as well. I like him a lot. I think that he has a lot of projectability. He's also somebody that hits from the right side. I think the power can play. He had 9 home runs and 470 at-bats, and also has some stolen base prowess as well. He did get caught a bunch in his brief stint, but I like him a lot. What do you guys think about Omar Estevez?
I like Estevez a little bit. The $6 million bonus is definitely a big thing. I'm glad you brought that up because anytime a guy signs for that much money, especially nowadays, it's an impressive thing. You instantly have to pay attention to him. The Dodgers kind of, I don't know, their philosophy for the Cuban guys makes me a little bit worried because it's kind of like they just sign anybody and then they figure it out. You know what I mean? Like yeah. They kind of just sign anybody and then kind of figure out what they are after they sign them. The numbers weren't great, but again, first year stateside, take nothing. No, take those numbers and
throw them away. Almost, yeah. It's
yeah,
more
because
about the adaptability.
Yep, and it's anytime a guy's getting acclimated to a new culture, you cannot. Hold him to anything. I mean, I watched video of this guy swing. Even facially, he looks a lot like Aledmys Diaz, and I could see that being a potential outcome. He needs to make more contact to fulfill that projection, but I would not be surprised. Wouldn't be shocked if that's what he turned out to be.
Well, the good thing that I know of now is he looks mature for his age. He's only 19, like I said. He's already 5'10", and he already has more weight than Ozzy Albies, than a few of these other guys that we've already talked about. So he's already fairly mature for his age, and I think the bonus in itself is showing confidence from the Dodgers side that they want him to work out. He's also somebody that could get traded. Who is it? Hector Olivera, maybe, type deal, like where, you know, they spent some money on him. Hopefully that doesn't – I'm not comparing him to Olivera in terms of their actual potential.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm talking about money-wise. The Dodgers are not afraid to spend money on a guy and then trade him. That could easily happen with somebody like Estevez. So just keep that in mind. Andy, do you have any thoughts on Omar Estevez?
Well, I had all these stats that I wanted to riddle off about how terrible he is and how we're never going to see him. But then Matt decided to shit on my stat theory, so I won't speak up.
So you don't like him based on the stats? Come on.
No, man. No. He's good, and I'd like to see a little bit bigger compilation of data. My only, and I'm going to have this as my only asterisk for him stat wise, is 121 strikeouts for 122 games. I mean, that's. I'd like to see a little bit more plate control from a guy who was given $6 million bonus.
Yeah, it wasn't great. He had a 74% contact rate. That equates to a 26% strikeout rate. Not a lot of walks either. Definitely something he needs to improve upon. This will, again, be a big year for him seeing what he does, see how he develops. So I like Estevez. We'll see what happens for this year. All right, anybody we missed on for number nine, guys? No?
No, good. Move on to number 10.
Number 10, I already went through Alan Hansen. Who do you guys have at number 10? Andy?
I have Shredrick Long because reasons we already said.
Absolutely. How about you, Maddie?
Eliezer Alvarez.
Get out of here. You're coming up. You guys have had some pretty interesting names so far. Give us some Alvarez talk.
Sure. Cardinals prospect, put him on the 40-man this year. Second base only. And that only is in question marks because it's not very good defensively. But the hit tool is impossible to ignore. The walk rate is strong. 323, 404, 476 in the Midwest League last year, which is the pitcher's league, mind you. 36 doubles, 6 homers, 6 triples. The stolen bases, 36 of them. I think that'll play. He's not really a plus burner. He's a weird guy right now. It's the only plus tool he has is a hit tool, and it's very, very good. I almost put borderline double plus on the hit tool itself. But no other skill is above average. Yes, he did steal 36 bases, but it's more on acumen than it is on pure raw tools.
Well, he got caught a ton too, right, if I'm not mistaken?
15 times, 30, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, he definitely is picks his spots well, and then the lack of speed shows in the getting caught. But Cardinals thought highly enough to add him to the 40-man roster this year, so obviously he's not going to come up this year. He's only an A-ball, but it's going to be a nice, interesting prospect to follow as he moves up to Double-A. So Eliezer Alvarez.
What do you think about Alvarez, Andy?
We were touching upon the extra base hits. He had 48 for 140 hits last year, which is nice. But I don't really trust guys who are labeled speedsters and really good bag stealers, but get caught so many times. I mean, if you look at Ozzie, pull up his stats real quick. Ozzie had what 21 bags stolen last year, only got caught 9 times. I mean, I'd love to see ratios like that for Eliezer if I was going to have him a little bit higher on my list.
I like the fact that he's Dominican because I love Dominican players. I just can't stop loving them. They always seem to work out, it seems. But
Trump builds the wall. It's going to be hard for them to come.
It will be a problem. So yeah. All you Dominicans out there, better
come over quick.
Yeah. Better get your stuff in order. But I love how tall he is. He's kind of lanky because he's only like 170 right now, but he's 5'11". That's a nice projectable body if things do progress with him. I think the hit tool is great, but at the same time, he's old for the level, and I need to see him continue to have the hit tool but refine the stolen bases because the fact that he got caught so much is certainly a problem. And while he is a guy that will still steal bases, I just don't count on him having 30-plus in the majors. I think we have a lot that we need to learn from somebody like him. I have him on my honorable mentions list. I have about 5 guys this week, and he's one of them because he's kind of a question mark to me. I have no problem people in Dynasty Leagues having him as like a speculation yep. ad and just seeing what happens. This is somebody that I don't think this year will kind of tell the story. I think it's going to be the next couple of years. He, at 22, I don't think we'll get promoted until he's about 25. And that kind of tells me that we have a lot we need to see. I want him to hit for more power, and I want him to refine his stolen bases before I really label him as anything. But he does have the ability, at least, to be really strong at second base. Maybe a better version of Neil Walker with a few more stolen bases, because the power, especially with how light he is right now, could progress, especially with his hit tool, because I love hit tool guys, but it's just going to take some time. And the fact that he's so old for the level gives me a little bit of hesitation, but at the same time, I think that there's a lot to like. So he's kind of right there in the middle for me. That's why I have him as an honorable mention, but there's a lot to like. So, Andy, give us some honorable mention guys that we really haven't mentioned.
So I have my two Texas second basemans. I have Anderson Tejada and Andy Alvarez. Both of them are decently aged, on the cusp. I like Andy Albanez a little bit better just because I think he has the possibility we could be seeing 15-15 of him if all works out well. Second base in Texas is Ruffed Odor, which is problematic. None of these guys we're going to see well soon, but
Ibanez. Andy Ibanez.
Stupid name. Yep. I'm Latino. I should be able to say this. He's 23. The age does worry me, but I like both of them. And then my other honorable mention is Ian Diaz. You know, I just want to say, Guatemalans, that's what I am. We have normal names like Pedro, normal Latino names. These guys all have silly names.
Well, for just, me, sorry about that. For me, I had Diaz and Tejada. They'll be on my shortstop list. But I think for me, the honorable mentions I'm rolling with are, I got Randy Arozarena is an international signing by the Cardinals out of Cuba this year. Second baseman, outfield type, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. The only question is the hit tool. Don't have enough data to build any opinions off of him yet, but he's a guy to follow. Scott Kingery is another name. He's a hit tool guy in the Phillies organization. He'll hit for modest power. Luis Yonder La-O. Yeah, that's exactly his last name, Yonder La-O. He's in the Texas Rangers organization. Just got him from Cuba. His interesting skill set itself. Projects to be average at everything, great at nothing. And then the last guy I want to mention is Carson Cistulli's boy, Max Schrock of the Oakland A's. Superior plate approach, fits the Oakland A's mold. Good enough glove for second, nobody else on the infield, but he should hit enough. So I like Schrock a little bit too.
All right, so I already mentioned I had a Suárez on here. I also have Alvarez as well. Luis Urias is one of my guys in the honorable mentions list. And I also have Andy Ibañez. I did not put Tejada or Ysan Diaz on my list because I have them at shortstop as well. But I, if anybody knows me, I love Ysan Diaz. I'm, like, absolutely in love with that guy. So don't give me any shit for not having him at second base. I also have Chad Pinder as well. It's more or less proximity. I do think he gets time this year when Jed Lurie goes down or he gets traded whenever that happens. But there's something to be said about playing time, and I think Pinder will end up being here at some point. So just a few guys to kind of keep keep your eyes on and make sure that you look out before you do your new Dynasty League draft, which we're about to do. Matt, I know we're about to have our
– Yeah, definitely.
What, 10-round draft for, kind of reloading our Dynasty League teams for the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Dynasty. So that'll be nice and fun. But anyways, that's the list. Andy, what is going on in your world nowadays? And tell everybody where they can find you.
So you can find me, as always, on A. Anderson FWFB. Not much. I'm getting excited for baseball season. It's a little early for me, too. I'm a commissioner of one league, and everybody's bothering me. I'm building a computer. You guys heard that last week, and that's pretty much done, so that's fun. But I am very much looking forward to baseball this year.
Absolutely.
This is like the Bermuda Triangle of months for me, because I just want baseball to come, and I don't care about basketball. Mm-hmm. Something's going on with the Knicks. Someone tell me. Tweet it at me.
No, nothing's going on with the Knicks, except for they have the worst owner possibly of all time. So,
yeah, that's one of them. Yeah.
This is the time of year where I really, really get upset that I'm not still in my hometown, Clearwater, Florida, nowadays, because right now is when you have in Bradenton, just like 40 minutes away from where I grew up, you have the Pirates warming up, and then you also have the Phillies right down the road in Clearwater. You have the Yankees in Tampa. You have Dunedin with the Blue Jays as well, and then just a couple miles south, you have the Twins in Fort Myers. You have the Rays in Port Charlotte. You have just all of these teams down there for the Citrus League or whatever, and it's really tough to be away from my hometown right now, because I used to go to, no joke, 20 plus spring training games a year, and it's really hard to be. And the weather in Florida right now is absolutely beautiful as well, so it's a little tough. But being in Nashville is kind of fun in itself as well. So Matt, where can people find you and everything?
Well, I just wanted to mention something really quick with the second base list. I mean, it's a good chance when we talk about shortstops that a lot of these guys will be on this list sometime next year. You look at guys, Gleyber Torres, Franklin Barreto, Brendan Rodgers, Jorge Mateo, Ysan Diaz, Anderson Tejada. All those guys have chances of getting moved over to second base. So this position may sounded kind of thin at the bottom, but it's going to get a lot stronger in a couple of years, and we just don't know where and when yet. But I think that's worth noting. So take note of all that for all you shortstop guys out there. But MD Tomp FWFB, my top 200 is going to drop this week. So be excited. I'm sure we'll tweet the crap out of that, because I'm proud of it. I've spent countless hours doing all these prospect podcasts this wintertime, writing up all those organization reports. Hopefully you enjoyed them. So they were on the site forever and ever and ever. So you can come back and tell me in a couple of years how wrong I was about, Elazier Alvarez, or how right I was about Zach Collins, whatever. Tell me what you think and get at me in there. But yeah, keep up listening to the pods. Friends of Fantasy Benefits is kicking ass this season, and glad you're a part of it.
Yes, absolutely. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Send me any questions and such there. You can also send any questions or screenshots, giving us a rate and review of the show to at Justin Mason, FWFB, or at Fantasy Benefits handle on Twitter as well. Please, again, rate and review the show. It really helps us out. It's obviously paid massive dividends to us thus far, really helped out in terms of our ratings. We want to continue to push up those rankings as well. Check out my daily matchups article on Baseball HQ this year. Check out our rankings on the friendswithfantasybenefits.com website. Check out all of our articles. Check out Matt's top 200 list, I believe. That's going to be coming out.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. I can't wait for that to come out. I know a lot of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits staff even uses that list as kind of a guide when we're doing our dynasty leagues as well. So please, you know, check it out. It's absolutely free. We do a lot of free content on the site, and it's really nice to, you know, see some different perspective than your usual guys like Keith Law and, you know, all your other guys out there from Baseball America and MLB.com giving their analysis. It's really nice to have guys that really dig in as well that aren't necessarily big names in the industry. And yeah, check out my rankings on Fantasy Pros as well. I should be getting those done fairly soon, and, you know, just check it all out. For Matt, Andy, and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in all your drafts. Every night